Good morning, Wake Up HCC. Cris Oviedo here with you on this Monday morning. It is Monday, October the 18th, and it is definitely feeling like fall outside. I had my big coat before the show started. I'm wearing a scarf. Really taking in consideration all of the wonderful things that I learned from the different guests that I have here in our show on how to take care of ourselves, prepare ourselves physically for the change of weather. And, you know, one of the recommendations, if you were with me when I had the conversation with Dr. Hunter Thompson, was to cover your neck. So I did that this morning. And the other thing that we continue to learn together about is how to be more sustainable, is how to be more mindful of our environment, how to continue to transition as well. I know with my guest that I have today, we've had conversations about that transition of weather and what that means and how we can continue to be mindful of our environment and take care of ourselves and our environment at the same time. And we're gonna continue that conversation today. And, you know, Bob, is always great to have you here. Thank you for being with me. And Bob, for those of you who don't know him yet, he is the Environmental Health and Safety Supervisor here at Howard Community College. I call him Green Bob. And I think that a lot of people call you that here on campus, Bob, too.
Or worse.
That's as far as I go. And we also have Belinda Green. She's Office Associate number two here with Bob. And she is, I'm going to call you Bob's right hand, Belinda.
Definitely.
I think, you know, Bob does a lot. And he is kind of like that phase and that go-to person, but he could not do that alone. And we are all very aware of that. So welcome to the show, Belinda. It's great to have you here. It's great to know you. As I was telling you before, I've seen you around and now I finally put it all together. So it's great to share the space with you guys. And we're going to talk about a couple of things. We want to invite everybody today. That's what we're doing today. We're inviting everybody to be part of Sustainability Day, Wednesday, October 20th here at Howard Community College. But I also want to invite everybody to extend that to October 23rd, which is National Make a Difference Day. So we're going to talk about ways in which you can come and be part of Sustainability Day here at HEC, and also ways in you can make a difference. And before we do that, Belinda, I always like to get to know my guests a little bit better. I think we are getting to know Bob really well with every conversation that we have, but this is the first time that I share this space with you. So I'd love to get to know you a little bit more about your passion for the environment, you know, where that came from, and just kind of like what inspired you to really start a job where you could just be so mindful of the environment and inspire yourself and others through that. So thanks for coming today and welcome.
Well, Cris, and thank you for having me. My passion for the environment, you know, really started when I was a young kid growing up in Orlando, Florida. Orlando wasn't what it is now. It was more rural area where everybody had gardens and grew their own vegetables. And so my father is really, I would say, my start of my passion for the environment, because that is what we did. We grew our own vegetables and fruit, took care of our yards. You know, working with Bob is kind of like working with my father. He had us out with so many chores, and you actually had to love the environment and just become a super passionate, because that's what you were going to do every day. You know, we fished on Thursdays for our Friday fish dinners, you know, and it was just not any plant. He was very particular about healthy things, and we just grew up doing these things. So, you know, I grew up with a passion of this, without knowing that it was sustainable.
You know, and you make a really excellent point. because I think we all should grow up like that. It should not be this additional effort that we're doing. It should not be this extra thing that we're trying to do and accomplish. It should just be that from when we're little, we learn to appreciate our environment. We learn to take care of it. We, you know, because I mean, if we really think about it, we grew up around the environment, right? It's not like we do our lives or we live our lives outside of it. It's we're right there. So somehow we make this assumption and the separation. And how wonderful to hear you say that I didn't know that I was being sustainable. I was just living my life and being mindful of the environment. I mean, I want to dig a little bit deeper into that, if that's okay with you, Belinda, because I want to inspire everybody. I really want to inspire everybody. You know, what did that? So you said you guys grew your own fruits and vegetables. So your first memories, right? I want you to talk to us and take us back in time to those first memories and at the beginning, because I want to inspire parents who might be listening right now and or teachers maybe, right? Who for this, for whom being mindful of the environment and sustainable is not so natural, right? And it's like, how do I do that, right? How do I teach the kids to be sustainable, and how do I even wrap my mind around this? How do we start? How do we start from early on? You know, your first experiences, take us back there and really give us some juicy details and some juicy ideas on how we can bring that into our lives.
Well, we didn't consider it juicy. We considered it hard labor. You know, we had a pecan tree that was, and a banana tree, a pear tree, a blueberry tree, you know, and, you know, everyone in the neighborhood would come and they would get fruit from us. You know, we had our own hen house, you know, where we went out and got our own fresh eggs, you know, from there. And my father would never consider selling on these items. You know, we just gave them, you know, and paper on the ground and that kind of, oh, no, that didn't work for him. We, you know, someone had to answer for why they had picked that up and who turned it was. There wasn't a vegetable that was known that we did not, you know, grow. We just lived a really healthy life, you know, and so, you know, we all had to, with the beginning of the cool weather, we all had to line up for this kava. I don't know if you ever heard of kava liver oil. But we all had, yes, everyone, yeah, that was our safeguard to getting through the winter without, you know, getting, you know, a cold. And my brother and I became young entrepreneurs because the skills that we learned from my father, we would go and do other yards because everyone wanted their yard to look like our yard. And in the community, you know, everyone knew everyone. No one had locked doors back then. There were no robberies or anything like that. And we learned how to do other gardens, but no one ever still could win the contest but us, because my father made sure that, you know, we didn't give away too many of the skills, you know, so we became quite talented. So I would always say, I'm never going to get a house because once I grow up, I do not want a garden. Because we spend our life gardening and keeping everything clean and sustainable without knowing, you know, and then as, you know, working with Bob, and learning how things really work, you know, my mind started reflecting back. Oh, we already did this. I already did this, but I didn't tell Bob how much I know because I didn't want to go gardening. But it was a happy childhood. You know, we had our own meat. I didn't even know that you can buy meat and stuff from the store till I was about 13 because we had everything right there that we needed. And, you know, this was my father's life. This was his life. And this is what he taught, you know, he taught us about small maintenance on cars. You know, you couldn't get your driver's license in my house until you knew how to change your tire. And that way, if you had a flat, you wouldn't be depending on someone else. We learned small maintenance things like changing our oil and keeping the battery clean, you know, like little small things that kept the cars going. And we all learned how to drive on a stick shift. So all of my siblings, we know how to drive a stick because there wasn't no automatic, you know, there was the standard from the steering wheel and then it went to the stick. So when I got to drive an automatic, I thought, oh, this is not even driving. This is just so cool, you know? And so yeah, my father was so bad. If we went to church or somewhere, you know, for our Sunday drives, you know, he'd see paper on the ground. He would tell us to pick it up and keep it. He said it was all our jobs. He taught us that it was all our jobs to keep the environment where we live clean and safe.
You know, he sounds like a great man and what a beautiful message.
Oh, he was. Yeah. He was serious. Everyone in the neighborhood loved him. And I felt like we were a little private store without being a store because everyone came to us for something. We grew it and we had it. That's how we lived.
And, you know, Bob, we've talked about this before, right? We've talked about, you know, the importance of it and in so many levels. We've talked about the economy. I mean, you know, Belinda, hearing you, you know, entrepreneur, you were an entrepreneur before everybody else. You talked about self-preservation in so many ways, even knowing what information to keep to yourself so that you don't end up doing the work that you don't want to do, right? Just so many lessons that you've learned, you know, through being environmentally conscious. I mean, through being and not even conscious, I mean, through just being involved with it, just having that relationship with the environment. And I want to, you know, Bob, I want the United Nations World Commission on the Environment and Development defines sustainability as meeting the needs of the present without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own needs. And Belinda just kind of gave us what that picture looks like and what that, you know, in real life, what that is. I want you, Bob, to also help us unpack this idea, right? Because it's almost like we, you know, Belinda, you talked about how you shared, how you, you know, you built community through what you were doing. You said it was hard work. You said that it was, you know, it takes work. It takes effort. But you also just shared so much joy right now through your story. So, Bob, how do we bring it all together, right? How do we bring that definition from the United Nations and the joy that Belinda just shared, you know, as we explain and we dive into sustainability?
I think it helps to understand where the United Nations was coming from when they wrote that definition. And this was in the late 60s and early 70s. And lots of things were happening that were making people aware of the environment. Things like the Cuyahoga River catching on fire. And this was, you know, nobody had thought about rivers don't burn. Rivers are there to flush away and take away the poisons that we don't want anymore. And finally, it started catching up with our civilization that we were doing things that were having a, a very big impact. They were earning rewards for a few. You know, the factories that were dumping their poisons didn't have to pay to have those poisons taken away. They just threw them in the river. And so suddenly it all came home, and when it caught fire, that affected everybody. And we started realizing things that there's over 300,000 people in this country that die from air pollution every year. And you multiply that around the world, and it's an incredible number. And then the ozone hole showed up. And people started realizing, hey, we're doing this to ourselves. Every spray can that we're using is creating skin cancer, okay? And we're killing ourselves. So the awareness came, if we're killing ourselves right now, what are we doing to our children, to the future generations? And also at that time, we thought we were gonna run out of oil. This was before fracking was discovered. And everybody realized suddenly that we have all these cars, and if we don't have oil to make gasoline, what are we going to do? So they started looking toward the future. And this was the time when they Eddie Albert and other folks created Earth Day, okay, for the first time to raise the awareness, okay, and spread the word to everyone. Now, the United Nations didn't just leave it there. They've continued their work. And now, along with the definition of sustainability, they have 17 goals for sustainability that they've come up with. And this is the scientists and the politicians from all around the world have come together and decided that these are 17 things that we have to do to save the Earth, to make the Earth livable for our posterity. And the Earth doesn't really care. Okay, the Earth, it's a rock. It's still going to be here. But we want to live on that rock. And so they came up with 17 goals that we need to do in order to keep living on this rock. And they're not in order of importance, but the first one is end poverty. And this is not something that most people think about when they think about sustainability. They want to think about the environment, okay? They think about air pollution and the rivers catching on fire. But when they think about people who don't have enough to eat, that migrate and move to other countries, that start wars, okay, have religious strife with other people, simply because all they have is poverty, okay? They don't have any way to move forward and take care of their own children. Let alone prosperity, you know, children move in further in the future. Okay. So this is what leads to most of our conflicts throughout the world. And of course, our own military is very engaged in this and talking to the politicians about it and saying, look, we'll go fight these wars, but it's up to you to stop these wars. Find the root causes that are leading people. And it's the resources. We produce enough food in this country to feed everybody in the world. And yet more than half of the food that we produce is wasted because we don't get around to eating it. And we throw it in the landfills where it rots and produces methane gas, which then destroys our atmosphere and adds to that that pollution blanket that's covering us all, that we want to talk about pulling aside or at least poking holes in. Okay. So it's another one of those 17 goals is eliminating food waste. And so that's something all of us can do. You talked about, taking steps, the things you can do. Don't buy more than you're going to eat. Okay. And realize also everything you buy, no matter what it is, every vote, everything you buy is a vote. So if nobody bought Hostess Twinkies, how long do you think Hostess would keep making Twinkies? Not long at all, right? So they'd come up with something nutritious, okay? Healthy Hostess or something that people did want to buy. And so you have an incredible amount of power. Okay. Just as you go through life and the choices that you make, And these are just little things that may not seem like they have any impact, but they really do. Everything you do adds up. And then, since we're all living on the same planet, we haven't got any place else to go yet. You know, maybe Mars sometime in the future. But for now, we got to live on this one. And so we all need to think a little bit more about what we're doing with what we have.
What a powerful message you just gave us, Bob, you know. And to bring Belinda's testimony, her life, right, and ending poverty, and how we don't think about it yet, it's a natural consequence. I mean, Belinda, you talked about how you guys would just grow things, and then you just said that your home was a store without being a store because people would come. How beautiful would it be if all of our homes, we would have maybe one item, right? Maybe the one thing, maybe in our neighborhoods, if you're living in an apartment complex and you don't have a whole lot of space, maybe, you know, you guys get together with your neighbors and somebody grows the tomatoes and somebody grows something else. And then, you know, once a month you exchange those items. I mean, talk about, you know, empowering ourselves, teaching our kids, changing the environment. And just like you said, Bob, really sending those messages that, you know, this is what we want. We want food that's nutritious. We want food that's healthy, that's really helping our bodies and our minds. But we also want to know that it's helping our community. We don't just want the sweetness, right? And we don't just want those processed things, because we are learning more and more that they are actually bad for us. And we want to go back to nature, and we want to go back to having community, and we want to go back to knowing our neighbors, and we want to go back to sharing. And that could, you know, just by doing simple things like that you guys both mentioned, we could end poverty and all of the things that would trickle from that, you know. I mean, how beautiful would it be to live in a world of peace? That'd be wonderful. So sustainability, maybe you never thought about it, but sustainability, you know, being just conscious about our environment and about our choices, about where our food is coming from, could be the path to world peace. I don't know, just thinking out loud here. But Bob, thinking about that, you know, another concept that was really interesting to me, as we think about sustainability, you talked about, you know, the state of the rivers and how we didn't think the rivers would catch on fire yet, you know, history proved us wrong. How do we check the health, right? Because environmental health is a concept that's usually used around sustainability. We think of sustainability and we talk about environmental health. Well, when we are feeling sick, we have, you know, we usually have symptoms, and we have things that we can check our symptoms with, right? Like we have thermometers, or we have other ways of checking our health. How do we check our environment's health, right? When we're thinking about environmental health at home, in our communities, what can we do to check and see how we're doing, you know, how our environment is doing?
It takes a little bit of research now. I mean, the weatherman every day tells you, okay, it's going to rain, it's going to be hot, or it's going to be cold, or ice or snow. But they have a lot of other information that they could give us if we ask them for it. There's a whole system of color codes. And when we hear the terms code orange, we ought to be wearing our masks when we go outdoors. In Maryland, we have a real problem with air pollution, mostly caused by all our automobiles, okay, right now. And the weatherman has that information, but they have limited time because they have to get to the commercials. So if we want this information, we need to ask them for it. Okay. There was a change for a while there when acid rain got a whole lot of information, you know, a whole lot of play and stuff. And the plants were actually dying, and the outdoor structures were rusting away because of the rain. They can contain so much acid was actually impacting them. But once we solve that issue, like the ozone hole, which is still there, by the way, it's smaller than it was, so it's not burning up as much of Australia as it was. But we generally don't want to, you know, be bombarded with all this information. And or at least that's what the media thinks, is that we don't want to hear that much. But if people start looking for that information and asking for it, then the media will start reporting it. Now, there's also a lot of work with the rivers, like we talked about. There are a lot of scientific and even volunteer groups. The Howard County Rotary Clubs have all started a project where they're going to be measuring the stream health of all the streams in Howard County. Now, this has been done a little bit by grade school children doing the, they do a report card every year, and they go out and measure the streams that are close to their schools. And they measure for things like how many animals, microinvertebrates, single-celled organisms are actually living in the streams that would be natural, and they report on the effect of it. And so the Rotary Club is going to take on this project and measure all the streams in Howard County to much greater detail than the public schools have been able to do. And so this is a wonderful project. But I only hope that people look at their results. These results are published and people are being told this is what's happening in the streams near you, but it seems to be having very little impact on what people do in their lawns. And there are some people that put in rain gardens and other activities, conservation plantings that allow the water to soak into the ground rather than running off the surface. And we've talked about this before, that the storm water that carries all the pollution off our streets and off our lawns into the waterways. And of course, that all winds up down in the Chesapeake Bay. And now they just released a report that people living near the Piscataway, which flows into the Chesapeake, should only eat fish 3 times a week because there's so much mercury and other pollution in it that it actually will affect human health. And so we need to pay more attention to these. And we do control this. This is another one of those little steps, okay, that you can do. And don't throw fertilizer on your lawn at a time where it's only going to wash off. And we've been sold this idea that every year your lawn needs to have fertilizer, and it needs to have lime, and then it needs to have fungicides to kill the mushrooms, and it needs to have herbicides to kill the weeds that aren't there. But just doing these routinely doesn't help the health of the lawn any, and all this stuff just washes off, okay, into the rivers. So the information we'll be getting more and more information with this Rotary project about what it is we're doing to the streams. And of course, the school kids are learning about it now, and they're going home, I hope, and asking Daddy, why are we putting this stuff on the lawn? And then having lawns at all, okay? Why not have more bushes, more native plants and stuff, which of course will attract the pollinators, okay? Which will help our food sources. And so that we don't have to spray so much pesticides and stuff on our food crops to kill the insects that the native insects and birds and stuff will eat anyway. So if we got a little more in tune with nature there, and Howard County farmers are leading the way, okay, in this, with the actions that they are taking to improve the soil, okay, health and quality of the soil here, and the way they're harvesting. Okay, Howard County is one of the areas that's leading the way in this. So applause to our farmers, for our farming community in Howard County. And so to support them, we need to be buying local food. Okay? Go to that farmer's market, or go to the grocery store that sells the local produce that does support our local farmers. Again, like Polita's family, you know, bring it closer to home. And the closer you can eat to where it was grown, the less energy and pollution it takes to get it to you. So we just all need to be eating a little closer to home, I guess, or a little closer to where it's grown.
You know, Bob, it's so simple, and yet it seems, you know, at the same time so difficult, because we haven't been doing it. We've gotten used to, you know, I, Belinda, when you said, I didn't even know that you could buy meat at the grocery store because it was always there. Whereas, you know, how did we go from that to where when you ask some kids, they are surprised that the meat and the fruits, that they don't just come from the supermarket, that they just, they're just not there, that that's not their their natural habit. It's fascinating. It's fascinating that we went from, you know, being so close to nature and just had that huge separation, you know, because we got so busy with everything else. But you've given us some really great ways, Bob, to just start doing little things, right? Those little steps, as you were calling them, to bring us back to that, to bring us back to that, and to encourage us and empower us to, it sounds easy. When you really think about it, it's not that difficult. And you know, look for, to your point, look for local initiatives. There are so many. There are initiatives that will come to your house, and, you know, the Ecology Institute here, they're looking for homes that might want to start planting things in their lawns, in their yards. They're going to work with you. They're going to teach you. So there's a lot of initiatives. There's the farms where you can buy your food from the farms. You pay up at the beginning and then you get your shipments. I think it's weekly. I've been looking into doing something like that. So there's all of these ideas, you know, that Bob just gave us, and there's so much more. So find the one that works for you. Maybe growing at home is not something that you're comfortable with. I know that I would like to learn more about it, but if I was to plant something today, it's not going to go anywhere because it's just not going to grow. I don't know how to take care of that. However, you know, I can look for that local farmer market. I can look for that local farm, and I can go and shop there rather than going to my regular grocery store. So little things, little steps. You don't have to do it all today. Bob, I do want to go back because you mentioned something. You said when we have Code Orange, which I think we're seeing more and more of that. You know, it's coming more often. You said that we should be wearing our masks. I'd love for you to explain that. And then I also do want to say that you materialize one of my worst fears. One of the things that I fear the most, I love walking in the rain. I absolutely adore, you know, especially in a summer day and it's raining, not thundering. I love to take a walk. And then you said, you know, the acid rain, which is one of my biggest fears. And I always think about the future generations. I'm like, I don't want them to miss out on this opportunity of just being outside. You know, playing in the rain is one of the most beautiful experiences, at least to me, right? That I enjoy the most. That brings me so much joy in my life. And to know that we've already been there, that it's already happened, that it's not a sci-fi reality. It's not, you know, it's not something that is on a Hollywood movie and it's just completely far out there, that it's something that we've already had to remediate. It's really, really scary. So tell us a little more about the Code Orange and what that means, because I had no awareness of that.
The acid rain is one of our success stories because we've largely eliminated the burning of coal. And that was what was putting the sulfur into the atmosphere, which was causing the acid rain. And it was so bad that areas that relied on fishing and relied on the water from the streams for irrigation had to actually add lime to the water to neutralize the acid that was in it, because it was killing all of the fish, and when people put them on their plants, it was killing the plants. And so they had these, and you can still see them some places, they're these big drums of lime out in the middle of the woods. And the water, it's sort of like a primitive water wheel that shakes that drum so that it drops lime at a tiny amount into the water so that it flows downstream and neutralizes the acid in the water. So that was one of the actions. But then we really got our act together and reduced the amount of coal that we were burning. So most of the United States, we've eliminated that. We don't have the acid rain issue anymore. But we do have, because of geography, we have areas that tend to trap bad air. And we happen to live in one of those. So the mountains are to our west, okay, And so our air doesn't get flushed out as much as people that live in other areas. So we're sort of trapped in here. And so we can get stagnant days where the same air just stays around for days on end. And when you get those pollution, mostly from cars, like I mentioned, staying in that area, the air pollution gets really bad, okay, in the area. And it generally happens in the summer. We have better air in the winter and in the spring and fall. But in the summer, when it heats up, is when we tend to get more of the those bad air days that they talk about. And they have a color code, and you can get a refrigerator magnet that has the code on it. That's what the National Weather Service, puts out. But if you get your weather information from your local weather source, they've determined that most people aren't interested in that anymore until it gets really bad. Okay? And then they'll start to mention that code orange. And that's when you know that it's really, really bad. Now, playing outside in the rain generally is a good thing because the rain is washing away, okay, all that pollution, and you get that wonderful, okay, sense of you're walking in clean air. And it is, because it's being flushed by the water. Now, if there's a lightning storm in the ozone, that's not good for you either. And also that you get the ozone pollution from trees. And this happens in the mountain areas, okay, sometimes where you'll have a little valley where the air is not moving, and the trees producing ozone makes an unhealthy area. So you need to sort of be aware of that too. Yeah, but you can feel the ozone burning in your throat. Okay, it's a raspiness, okay, there. And so that, you know, that that's not good for you. But the other pollutions you don't notice as much until horrible things start to happening, where you start wheezing or you start bleeding at your nose, all the, you know, really awful things that used to happen a lot in history in the industrial areas. We've all heard about London and the black smog went there when everybody burned coal, everything. And of course, when people start getting weaker respiratory systems, things like tuberculosis, okay, and other things flourish. And so people that could afford to, of course, moved out of the city and left it to the people that couldn't afford to get out. And so the essential services were still being conducted down in the city, and the people were getting sicker and sicker in there. And this tradition, there, not a tradition, it's a economic decision. Where do we put our truck depots? Okay, where in Baltimore, where is it that we burn trash? Okay, right downtown, because the land down there is cheaper, because that's where people don't wanna live. People wanna move further out. And so we've more and more, okay, we've done this to neighborhoods. And of course, where do we put the throughways through? Where the housing is the cheapest, because people don't want to live there. And so we've been concentrating more and more of the bad effects, okay, and putting them in smaller and smaller areas, isolating down there. Downtown Baltimore used to be very industrialized. And so we've made big strides in taking care of that, you know, the paint factories, okay, and things down there. There's still Superfund cleanup sites in the heart of Baltimore, okay, where the soil is still toxic and needs to be removed. We've made big strides, but there's still a lot more to do, you know, in there. And so if, you know, ask those questions, ask the weatherman, you know, what's the air quality, okay, like today? I know on campus, as part of our LEED requirements for building, we measure our indoor air quality and report on that. But so often the outdoor air quality, everybody ignores it. We also advise people not to open the windows in the buildings. On most days, the air out there is worse than the air inside, because the air inside, we can run through filters before we can circulate it around. Nobody's filtering that air outside. And so there's just a few days each year where the air outside is worth bringing, okay, inside without filtering it. So we all do need to pay a little more attention to what we're breathing. And I gave you that figure, how many people die from air pollution, okay, every year. We don't think about it much, but all it's the little particles, okay, that are in the air and the effect of the chemicals, okay, that are in the air, and what they do to our bodies and to our bloodstreams in particular, as we try and circulate through our bodies, the blood, when picking up the oxygen from our lungs, okay, we circulate those chemicals. And of course, the particles then clog our lungs. So it does have a very big impact on us.
Instead of worrying about a bad hair day, we should worry about a bad hair day. You know, a bad hair day. That seems more important, you know, when we look at the big scheme of things. Belinda, let's go back to Sustainability Day. Take us back to Sustainability Day. And you know, why do we celebrate it here at HEC? What is Sustainability Day?
Sustainability Day is all about our students. You know, here at HCC, our students are most important, and we care about our students, you know, and, you know, they're the young people, you know, so we want them, we're trying to instill in them, you know, as they start their adult life, you know, how to be sustainable, you know, to help keep the world sustainable about recycling. You know, we put up this brand new in the quad compostable bins, and we have signs posted, you know, all around, and kind of hoping that the students, the adults that work here on faculties, staff members and everything, you know, the about what goes in the recycle and what goes in the trash. And we're hoping that everyone is going to pay attention to the signs and, you know, kind of follow directions. We have Jean Anderson at the quad working there, and she is really kind of leading this, you know, for us, why Bob and I are down on this end, and we send some students up as well to make sure that, you know, this is done properly, you know, and it's not to be picky, it's very important that we really take sustainable serious. But Sustainability Day, you know, is a day that we celebrate annually here at HCC, and it comes not a couple of months earlier than, you know, Earth Day, you know, and it's could be fun, and it is fun, but, you know, it's really all about the students. On Wednesday, October 20th, we're hoping that everyone's going to come out between 10 and 3. We got a lot of vendors that will be here, and, you know, with various sustainable ideals and things, and come out, you know, take a half hour, an hour away from your desk, and come down, join us, walk around, and you know, just view what we have and get engaged in the, you know, the fun. We have some videos that will be played that will really, really get more in depth about sustainability. So, you know, take a few minutes, go into room AC, Academics Commons 116, and just listen to what is being said. Sarah, we have Sarah, very, very knowledgeable about a sustainable, I mean, and we also have Ruth Alice Wilson, you know, their videos, you know, would be, she has one on food waste. Okay. And see, we did food waste at my house in a different way. I think it, you know, of learning it in a different form, you didn't put more on your plate than you were going to eat. And if you did, you absolutely could not throw it away. You had to sit there until you finished that plate. You could not throw, we didn't throw away food. My father did not see that. We did not throw away food. And we gave away food to people that needed it, but we did not throw away food. And you absolutely ate everything that you put on the plate. So Chris, I hope to see you and, you know, all of the staff here at ACC, you know, to come and make sustainability day what we're hoping is going to be for our students. You know, we're all here for our students to help them to grow and to learn.
Absolutely. You mentioned, you know, and I noticed them last week, that we have that compost factor now. Why are we bringing it into HEC? You know, why did we start composting here?
Well, it's the composting directly. We got a grant to pay for it from the county. And the money they used is the money collected from the 5-cent bag fee that everybody pays at the stores. And so we got a big chunk of money to start the composting program. The reasons behind it are that all that food waste was going to the landfill before this. And of course, there's no room in the Howard County landfill. It all gets taken by train down to Northern Virginia and put in a landfill down there. But if food and other stuff that can rot is put in a landfill, it produces methane gas. Now, some of that can be captured and burned, but most of it escapes into the atmosphere. And it's 40 to 50 times as bad as CO2. So it's really having a big impact on our atmosphere. Now, if we compost it, very little escapes into the atmosphere. And it's only CO2 that escapes into the atmosphere. So we do better by 40 to 50%, okay, by doing the composting. We estimate that every semester, we will collect 40 tons worth of CO2 for put against our carbon footprint. Now the college produces quite a bit of carbon with all the energy that we use and everybody driving to campus. So anything that we can do to reduce that number is a plus. And we've made a commitment that by 2050, we'll be carbon neutral, which means we won't produce any more than we take care of. And so this 40 tons is going to be a big step, okay, in us. We've been making big steps each time we build a new building. We make it more energy efficient. And we use recycled materials to build it, so we're releasing less carbon into the atmosphere. Okay? But we've run out of things to do, okay, that can really make a big impact. I mean, we've replaced all the lighting with LED lighting. All the windows are made very energy efficient. So we're limited as the steps that we can take. And composting is going to be a big step forward for us. And already we're getting other areas across campus that are interested in doing the composting in their area, such as the culinary program. And eventually we'll be composting all the food waste all over campus, and paper, okay, is also compostable. And so there's a lot we can do in the future to put a lot less into that landfill and produce less of that, the methane gas, and reuse it once it's made into compost. Okay. We can bury it in the soil, and this is what the farmers in Howard County are doing. They're taking the brush and the other waste products that they can find, and they're burying them in their soil in the right way and at the right time of year so that it enriches their soil so that there's not the waste just being burned or put into the landfill where it produces the methane. So it's a big step forward for us. The county is really excited about doing us doing this. They're wanting us to set the example for businesses all over the county. Now, Columbia Association and Howard County already do the Green Bin program, and where about half of the residents of Howard County have these green bins where the county will come by and pick up the compost, okay, once a week. Okay. So this is their big effort, okay, to reduce that methane gas that's escaping from the landfill. So they have their own commitments to becoming carbon neutral. And so this helps them meet their numbers, and ours are added to theirs. Okay, so it's a big step. And composting is something everybody can be doing at home. Okay? Now, be aware, you can't compost meat scraps, okay, and things like that at home, because the animals will tear it open. Okay? But vegetable matter, okay, and including with that, with the napkins, things of that sort, you can put those in the ground or in a compost bin, and the county will give you a compost bin. And I think they'll be giving out some at Sustainability Day. They usually do. So there's a lot you could do at home to make the compost, to make your own plants. And particularly if you're going to be growing vegetables, you need to have an awful lot of fertilizer in that soil. And the soil is so bad here in Howard County because we abused it for so many years. But the compost is the perfect thing to add that to your soil instead of going out and buying fertilizer, a lot of which is going to wash off, okay, and go down into the rivers and into the Chesapeake Bay. But that compost is not going to wash off. It's in larger particles, so it's going to break down slower and make your soil more healthy.
You know, it always comes back in a circle. Like, you know, you're doing one thing and you're thinking you're concentrating on this one thing, but then it's affecting this and this and this. Like, it always comes back. It's all really, you can really see through sustainability how, you know, the cliche phrase is all connected, how it really truly is all connected. The other thing that I did want to say is, you know, I was feeling really, really bad whenever I forgot to bring a bag with me to the stores and I had to pay that 5 cents and get that plastic bag. But now I don't feel as bad anymore because I know that it's coming back.
For a good cause.
It's been used in a wonderful way. So there you go. So Belinda, you gave us a bit of an overlook of what's happening 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. here at HEC with the table fair, you know, the film showings, you talked about that. There's opportunities to interact via Zoom with workshops. I know that, Bob, you usually do the campus tours, and I saw that on there. I don't know if it's going to be you personally who's going to be doing them, but I saw that that's still happening on Sustainability Day. One thing that really caught my attention and I was so glad to see is from 3 to 6, there's an opportunity to try international vegan food, and that's in partnership with the culinary department. And we've seen today the importance and how natural it is to have culinary and sustainability work together. Tell us a little more about that event and what we can expect and how people can interact with that event.
Well, you could just come with your appetite. Chef Eric and his students are going to be preparing. They've got this wonderful dish, based with chickpeas, but lots of other stuff in it too. And I had to stop reading the recipe. My mouth was watering so much. It just looks so delicious. And so we invite everyone to please stop by between 3 and 6, get a sample. And you could probably have more than one, okay? But they say they'll have plenty on hand. They're going to be making it and demonstrating it in the Galleria. And so you can watch and see how it's made, get a copy of the recipe, and have some. And please enjoy. And so we'll look to see everybody. If you're leaving campus at 5, stop by, okay? But they'll be there from 3 to 6 serving their delicious dish. And then at 6, we're going to have the members of the Howard County Sustainability Board. And these are folks that do a lot of long-range planning for Howard County. And they're experts in all different areas of sustainability. And they are producing an update of the Howard County Sustainability Climate Action Plan. Now, the college has, we have our own climate action plan about how we're going to get to climate neutrality, but I'm really interested in seeing what they've come up with, because they certainly got a lot of experts working on it. And we're going to have a panel discussion with them from 6 to 8, so we can learn about what their plan is and how the community college and people in Howard County, how we can all fit into this goal of climate neutrality, see what their climate action plan is.
Belinda, tell us, please, where we can find more information, where we can get all of the details, where we can connect with the event, with Sustainability Day, find out if there may be volunteer opportunities or, you know, things like that.
Oh, absolutely. There's always volunteer opportunities. We're going to be planting the amazing pollinator flowers in the amazing pollinator garden, you know, that has been adopted by the support group here on campus. The support group is really excited about having adopted this. We have Pam Ives, Ms. Sunny from Environmental Service, a second shift, and Howard Allen, he's in the mail room. The three of them are our lead individuals for the pollinator trail. And we can use help out there planting the flowers. If you have any flower skills, please come out at our table personally. We absolutely, you can come and spend an hour with us and volunteer at our table. You know, if you go online here at HCC, you should be able to pull up and see our flyers. We have flyers, we will be posting them today. They're not posted as of yet, but they will be posted before the end of this day around, and they'll be giving you a little bit more insight of what to expect on Wednesday. But just come out and you'll really get to see, you know what's coming out, because it's going to be an amazing event, and it's a really an educational and fun day for ACC and the students.
So Wednesday, October 20th is a full day event from 10 a.m. until, I mean, you know, if we count the panel, it's until 8 p.m. There's lots of things happening. There's lots of ways that you can get involved in person, online. You know, there's a lot of unique ways in which you can interact and be and just become more sustainable. I did also at the beginning of our conversation said October 23rd is National Make a Difference Day. And we only have about 3 minutes left here. HowardCC.edu is another good place before I go into our end of the show today. HowardCC.edu and the search bar, my good friend, just type on their Sustainability Day, and that will bring you up also all the details, more information, where you can go, where how you can connect with the event, and all of the you know, the different panelists, the different things that are happening on that day. So October 23rd, National Make a Difference Day. I want to close our conversation. You guys have given us so much inspiration today. You guys have given us a lot of great ideas, a lot of great ways. But if there was one thing that you wanted, you know, people to start make a difference, right, on October 23rd, somebody who is like, okay, I hear you guys, I see you, and I want to get involved. I want to do something. I just don't know where to start. If there was one thing that you wanted people to start on October 23rd, changing, making, doing, what would that be? Belinda, let's start with you.
I would love that everyone would get involved with the compostable that event that we have started here on campus. You know, the county has given us a grant, and, you know, we have the bins in, and, you know, so it's something that's brand new. So since that is our newest thing here that we're trying to get started, I would love that everyone would just make an effort to get involved and lead that in the right direction.
Bob, how about you?
Well, I would like everybody to exercise their power, and everything you buy, I want you to realize that that's a boat. It's a signal of approbation. It's showing that you like it and that people are doing the right thing if you buy their product. So think about what you buy and buy better. And like Biden says, build back better. I say, buy better. Spend your money and make your vote count. Make them listen to you. Yeah, buy the stuff that you think you're going to want to buy again, and buy the good stuff.
Yeah, I think those are two excellent ways in which we can get started. You know, little things, just learn about it. I mean, you know, my thing is come to Sustainability Day. That's one way to start, because you can maybe come and maybe you're listening about composting. You're like, I don't know, that sounds complicated. Maybe you're listening about, you know, the gardens and the native plants and all of these other things that Bob just talked about. And you're like, that sounds really complicated. Come to Sustainability Day. Be involved. Get involved. Take a look. Maybe it's a lot easier than what you're expecting it to be, what you think it is. And, you know, like Bob said, I mean, just making those decisions of where I'm going to put my money at, that sends a big message out there. Thank you both so much, Bob and Belinda. I really appreciate you guys and everything that you do. I know that you both inspire me. Belinda, your story is so beautiful. You know, and again, I just, as a mom, I'm like, oh my gosh, I wish I had met Belinda a while ago, because I could have done so much better, but it's not too late to start, right? I think that's the message that I'm taking with me today. Yeah. That's the message I'm taking with me today, Bob, that it's not too late, that, okay, I have not been so mindful. I did not really have this. I thought sustainability was this separate thing. Belinda, you said today, it's just life. That's how it is. And Bob, you're telling us, you know, even our expenses, even where we spend our money, sends a message and can make an impact on our planet. So I want to continue living in this rock, like you said at the beginning of the conversation, Bob. And I want the future generations to still have and be able to enjoy it to the best. So let's do our part. Let's continue to use the resources, but let's use them mindfully so that we're setting it up for success for future generations. Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Belinda. Thank you, everybody, for listening and watching. Share this with everybody. And until next time, I am Cris Oviedo. Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.